This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Can those guys play or what? I would definitely opt for the first of those two options. They can play. Opening up with some music from that exotic land far, far, far across the water. The water to which I refer is the Hudson River. And that exotic land far, far beyond the water is California, and specifically the San Francisco Bay Area, definitely one of the more exotic places I've ever been. Let's see. We've got something going on here for tonight for people who celebrate Christmas, and some other stuff going on here tonight for people who celebrate Hanukkah, and hopefully people who celebrate neither or both or whatever can also enjoy. Let's see. Of course, we started out with the Christmas Jug Band with Dan Hicks with Hey Santa. And we'll be hearing some more from them later. And then we immediately followed up with a band called Tezlim. Also from the Bay Area, I believe they're actually an Oakland-based band. Featuring a really amazing fiddler by the name of Kyla Flexer on the violin, and Gary Hedgedis, if I am pronouncing his name correctly, forgive me if I'm not, on the oud, as well as the viola and other instruments. He's a multi-instrumentalist. And this is actually brand spanking new. I actually bought this at the Old Time Record Store in sunny El Cerrito. Actually, it wasn't so sunny when I was out there, but actually heard her getting some airplay, heard Kyla, I believe in one of, perhaps it was with Tezlim, or perhaps another one of her musical outfits, because she's got a few, on KPFA, our sister station out there in the Bay Area, and said, yo, I need that music to play it on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, and that's what's happening right now, or actually it's what happened, 3 minutes ago. I played that music on the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Well, here we are. It's the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. Since I said that, I might as well give a station break. It's now 12:24 in the morning on listener-supported non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade. With me, Bill Weinberg, behind the microphone tonight. Let's see. Last week we had on some guests speaking about the situation in Iran, about which we will have more to say. Before that, I was out in the Bay Area the week before that. I thought Anne-Marie Hendrickson was going to be sitting in for me, but in fact she was out sick, so I hope Anne-Marie is feeling better and that we'll hear her voice on these airwaves soon, and a big thanks to Ken Gale and Alexei Kondratiev for doing a fine job. That was a really good show. I listened to it on the internet out there in El Cerrito, California, which is where I was staying. So great job, guys. So now Tezlim do Sephardic music, broadly defined. Some of it, you know, sort of specifically Jewish, and much of it Turkish, Greek, Armenian, etc. Just music from the greater Mediterranean world. And what did we hear? We heard three cuts. The first was a medley of three Turkish tunes from the Black Sea region, the Pontic region of Turkey. Then we heard a... oh, wow. Is that actually George Megredichian? No, can't be. He's passed away. It says... oh, yeah. Okay, Gary first heard this beautiful Jewish folk melody played by Armenian oud player George Megredichian. Mm-hmm. The title translates from the Hebrew as On the Hills, the title being Ale Giva. So I don't know which word means on the, and which word means hill. I think Giva means hill. But maybe I'll be corrected by somebody who speaks Hebrew, which I do not. So, and then the last one that we heard was a Turkish song called, or Turkish melody called Petaluda. Well, isn't that a town in Marin County? Oh, no, that's Petaluma. Sorry. And Gary was playing the saz, if you can believe it. What a multi-instrumentalist. I'm so impressed. Viola, oud, sod. And he's not a mere dabbler. He knows what he's doing on all of them. Really, really impressed with this stuff. So we're going to be hearing from a little bit more from Tezlim later as well. And I have to say that I had a really, really good time out there in the Bay Area for a week. Did a whole lot to lift my spirits, and my spirits really needed lifting. So I'm actually feeling somewhat better. I've even been getting into the holiday spirit a little bit here, uncharacteristically. And we opened up with some good vibes music, right? So all of you people who are tired of my kvetching will be vindicated. But unfortunately, I do have some kvetching to do as well tonight. Just because I need to sort of clear my desk. It's the end of the year. I need to tie up loose ends and take care of unfinished business. So I'm going to try to... I'm going to try to stay in the holiday spirit and not rant and kvetch and complain too much. But there are some things which I do need to address just to get them out of the way. And then next week for the final Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade broadcast of 2009, we're going to be indulging in some pure escapism. I'm preparing to do some reading from folk tales from a particular Asiatic culture with appropriate music. So it's going to be pure holiday season escapism, actually not on a particularly holiday theme, just to sort of getting into the spirit of, you know, putting aside all the bad political vibes and just indulging something for pure pleasure and escapism. Of course, it'll be as, you know, didactic, as I hope that my broadcasts always are. Have a little something going on, a little bit of food for your head, even as it's going to be largely a hedonistic pleasure, if all goes well. I still need to do a lot of reading to prepare for next week's show. So those of you who get off on that kind of thing, that's what we're going to be doing next week. And hopefully that will give us a nice fresh start for the new year. I understand, you know, I've gotten into hot water with a lot of the listeners because, you know, a lot of the listeners and a lot of things which I've been hearing over the airwaves have sort of pushed certain buttons. of mine, and I confess that my buttons got pushed. And but you know, I sort of had to, you know, some issues which I just sort of feel that I need to be the bad guy because nobody else is being the bad guy, and you know, it's a dirty job, but somebody's got to do it. So with that said, I am going to have to be the bad guy a little bit tonight before the show is over. So maybe we should just get that out of the way. But I'm also going to try, as my WBAI comrade Grayson Challenger puts it, to stay on the azimuth. But unfortunately, one of the things I have to complain about is the fact that the cassette player in the studio still isn't quite working. It's still literally, the buttons are still literally being held down with masking tape. And I know all of us people who still use cassettes are just considered to be these quaint anachronisms. Well, I demand my right to be a quaint anachronism. Let's not have the fiction that we indeed have a cassette player in the studio if in fact it does not work. Let's either remove it completely or fix it, okay? That's just what I say, okay? So if the appropriate parties are listening tonight, they will hopefully take my words to heart. So, okay, now we are going to move into the special bad vibes portion of the show. But hopefully they're not going to be that bad. I'm going to try not to rant too much. But there are certain things which I do need to address. And then we're going to, probably that'll just take us through the next half hour, so that in the last half hour, I can just play more really, really good music, and we can all smile for the last half hour, even if we're kind of grit our teeth for the next half hour. So all of you people who don't want to hear any bad vibes or kvetching or ranting at all, well, you know, you can just, like, turn off the radio for the next half hour and join us again in 30 minutes. And then we'll just hear nice music for the remaining half hour, if all goes according to plan. You never know. And also, as long as I'm giving warnings here, this next cut, which I'm about to play from the Christmas Jug Band, with Dan Hicks, before I get into the bad vibe section of the show, is, shall we say, politically incorrect. So those of you who are offended by ribald humor have been duly warned, okay? Those of you who do not like dirty words and political incorrectitude in a spirit of smirking fun can exercise your inalienable human and constitutional right to turn off the radio. But for those of you who do appreciate ribald humor, do stay tuned for another rockin' skiffle cut from the Christmas Jug Band with Dan Hicks. Coming right at ya.
Santa used to like to chuckle. He's always been a belly full of laughs. Sitting in a Santa Claus chair, posing for the photographs. But now he don't laugh so much. In fact, about one third less. Old Saint Nick got a problem. Man, he's in an awful mess, 'cause he used to go ho, ho, ho. Now he's only going ho, ho.
Uh-oh, where the other ho go?
I don't know, but Santa's feeling mighty low. He used to do hidey-ho, now he's only doing hidey.
Uh-oh, where the other ho go?
I don't know, Santa lost a ho. Now Santa's been doing his best to get to the Christmas mood. Keeping his little elves happy, he's the number one Christmas dude. But there ain't no joy, 'cause just one toy is missing from Santa's shack. He never had a doll go AWOL once he got her in the sack, 'cause he used to go ho, ho, ho. Now
always only going ho, ho.
Oh, oh, where'd the other ho go?
I don't know, but Santa's feeling mighty low. He used to do hidey-ho, now he's only doing hidey.
Uh-oh, where'd the other ho go?
Don't know, Santa lost a ho. Only got two hoes, no one would believe. Oh, Santa, if you need some cheering, stop by on your way. Jug band going to party all the way to Christmas Day. Just open up your bag of joy, soon you're gonna feel alright. You're gonna leave here laughing, even if you're one whole life. Cause you used to go ho, 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 now he's only going ho.
Okay, is everybody offended now? I certainly hope so. All right, we're just getting started. Don't you worry. So, okay, the first thing I have to rant about is the WBAI elections. Man, what a mess. Where to begin? What a mess. Now I guess, you know, I'm free to talk. I don't, you know, particularly feel like... I have anything to say about who won or lost, but more about the process itself. I never got to vote. I never received a ballot. I'm naming names, okay? I'm sorry. If I get unceremoniously yanked from the airwaves, so be it. I am calling out Les Young and, I'm sorry, Ethan Young and Les Radke, who were ostensibly overseeing this debacle, okay? I never got a ballot. All right. I wrote both of them. I sent email to both of them over and over and over. I must have sent them, you know, at least 5 emails, perhaps it was 10, saying, hey guys, just a friendly reminder, I haven't received a ballot yet. Here's my address. Please send me a ballot. Never got any ballot. Finally, I got a listener ballot in the mail, because indeed I am a paid up subscriber to WBAI, but I can't vote as a listener because I'm staff. I needed to get a staff ballot. So I scrupulously did not fill out my listener ballot, but merely, you know, got back on the internet and sent Les and Ethan another friendly little reminder. Yo, guys, haven't received a staff ballot. I got this listener ballot in the mail, but I can't use it because I'm a producer. Send me a staff ballot. No answer. Hello, guys? No answer. Okay. So, finally, just before I went out to California, I said, I wrote them a letter saying, not a letter, but an email, saying, okay, this is it. Last chance, you know, because I was out there for the last week before. I actually got back on the 9th, which was, I got back on the evening of the 9th, right? And the deadline was the 10th. So I wasn't going to be able to check my mail until it was too late to return the ballot. So I sent them email a few, you know, like maybe 5 days before I left saying, look, this is your last chance. Get me a ballot or I can't vote. No reply. So then I get back and I'm told that, the first thing I did when I got back is I checked my mail And if, in fact, there had been a ballot there, I would have come down to WBAI and dropped it off. But there was no ballot in my mailbox, so I didn't come down to WBAI on the 10th. And only found out after the fact that if I had, I would have been able to pick up a ballot at the station and vote then and there on the spot. But nobody informed me of this beforehand, now, because I was out on the West Coast. So I was listening to KPFA, not WBAI, for the week before the elections. You know, apparently there were numerous announcements which were made over the airwaves of WBAI in, maybe 24 or 48 hours before the deadline, but I didn't hear them because I was on the other side of the country. They just, at the 11th hour, the very last minute, they changed the rules of the game to try to, make up for the fact that the elections have been an absolute 100% total shambles. And I consider this to be a mere face-saving gesture, which is completely meaningless because those people who, weren't around to hear it, people who just didn't happen to be listening to WBAI those 2 days, such as myself, never got the word. And I also never got the word because I'm not on the producer's list, because the producer's list is an incessant avalanche of evil spam. So that's why I'm not on the producer's list. So I get enough spam as it is. So I never got to vote. And I don't consider this, last-minute bait and switch of, we're going to make up for the fact that the elections have been a total shambles and, lots of people didn't get ballots who were supposed to, and lots of people did get ballots who weren't supposed to. We're going to make up for this, by having, by allowing people to come in at the very last minute and vote. And this is just like this 11th-hour thing which they pull out of their hats to try to make the elections legitimate. And I say it's bogus. That's what I say. So, it's really sad because we know that there was already an attempt to get an injunction to stop the election altogether and to start the election over. And I honestly do not think that there has been any attempt by one faction or another to, deliberately disenfranchise people. For political ends, I don't think so. I think that this was equal opportunity ineptitude. But it's a part of the larger crisis of chronic dysfunction at WBAI, and it is related to the factional struggle because, I hate to say it, and when I say I hate to say it, I really, really mean that I hate to say it. The elections are going to be clouded by this illegitimate process. And even though I honestly do not believe that there was any conscious attempt to throw the elections, I don't think so. I don't think that there was, political manipulation or shenanigans. I just think there was absolute ineptitude. It's going to be used by those who would wish to portray a conscious conspiracy to disenfranchise people, even though people in both factions and people who are in neither faction and fastidiously independent, such as myself, were also denied the right to vote. But it's going to mean that there's going to be a cloud over the elections and there's going to be a cloud over the new local station board, which is the last thing that we need when the atmosphere is already as contested and as poisonous as it is here at listener-supported, non-commercial, chronically dysfunctional WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. So, Les Radke and Ethan Young, if you guys are listening tonight, shame on you. These elections were a debacle. And I'm the living evidence of it. I never got to vote. And, you know, you can argue that you were overstretched with inadequate resources and you were getting hundreds of emails, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, the more forthright thing to say would be, yeah, the buck stops here. We messed up. So I'm waiting for you guys to say that. And I don't know, you know, where we go from here. I don't know what the proper course of action is to make amends for this mess. But here we are. I'm just putting the cards out on the table, and we'll let other people read them as they will. I don't claim to have any answers here, but I don't feel that there is any percentage in dodging the issue or sweeping unpleasant realities under the carpet in a metaphorical sense. So, sorry, but, you know, well, enough about that. Let's move on to even more unpleasant things before we get back to some very pleasant music to make up for the to make up for all this kvetching. So, just getting out my last kvetching of the year, because I promise there won't be any kvetching at all next week. Zero, absolute zero kvetching next week. Just getting it all out of my system this week. Okay. Now the programming which I did, several weeks of programming, beginning with the anti-Semitic attack which took place on the Dresden synagogue on the anniversary of Kristallnacht this year, occasioned a flood of criticism, very, very harsh criticism from many of my listeners who accused me of alarmism, paranoia, et cetera, et cetera. Well, there were also some other listeners who were extremely grateful for that programming that I did and pointed out some other news clips which I missed, which only merely further fueled my paranoia. So a couple of things, a couple of developments which have taken place since then, which I failed to note over the air, and I now will do so. One is on November 27th. I don't know if you caught it. There was a derailment of a Russian express train between Moscow and St. Petersburg, or Petrograd, in which it has now been determined that it was, in fact, apparently a terrorist attack. There were explosives which were found on the tracks at the scene of the derailment, where, by the way, 26 people were killed. And lo and behold, a neo-Nazi organization has come forward to take credit for it. Now, that doesn't mean they actually did it. Maybe they're just opportunistically taking credit for it. But it does appear that, A, it was not an accident. It was an actual attack. And, B, a neo-Nazi organization by the name of Combat 18 issued a communique to the Russian media claiming responsibility for it. Now, the whole idea, you know, once again, I just don't get it. You know, Russian neo-Nazis? I mean, that's even less logical than Czech neo-Nazis, which is already pretty illogical. I mean, there were Czechs who collaborated with the Nazis. There weren't too many Russians who collaborated with the Nazis. There were, you know, white Russians and Lithuanians and so on who collaborated with the Nazis, but not too many Russians collaborated with the Nazis. And, you know, the Russians really suffered horribly under the Nazis. Their whole country was destroyed. So I just don't understand Russian neo-Nazis. I mean, what's up with that? But in any event, whatever's up with it, it's a reality, it seems. A paradoxical reality, but nonetheless a reality. Okay, so 25 people dead. And, you know, in this apparent terrorist attack on a Russian express train, And Russian neo-Nazis, if that's not an oxymoron, are taking responsibility for it. So, you know, go argue with them. Don't argue with me. A listener alerted me to the fact, a listener in Canada, of all places, an internet listener in Canada, alerted me to the fact that not only was there a swastika graffiti painted on the Dresden Synagogue in Germany on the anniversary of Kristallnacht, but there was a similar attack on three Jewish centers in Calgary, Canada. Calgary, Manitoba, is it? I believe it's Manitoba. Have I got that right? Forgive me if there's any Canadians, if it's not in Manitoba. I think it's Manitoba. I was alerted to this by, once again, a listener in Canada, and I got onto the internet to, I received a voicemail message from a listener in Canada alerting me to this. And I got onto the internet and on the website of the CBC News, a story from November 16th, actually just a couple of days after the Kristallnacht anniversary. Police are investigating anti-Semitic vandalism at three Jewish centers and nearby property in southwest Calgary. Swastikas and anti-Semitic slogans were spray-painted on the Jewish Community Center at 90th Avenue and Jerusalem Road, southwest, and the Holocaust Memorial in front of it, and the House of Jacob Synagogue a block away. And there are these charming photos that go along with the story of the graffiti, which includes not only swastikas, but here, the graffiti in Pump Hill included a swastika and the words, "Kill Jews," spray-painted on a community mailbox. Okay, that's not particularly subtle, is it? No. So, and, you know, what gets me down, this, you know, the fact that these attacks happen doesn't really get me down that much, because I expect Nazis to be Nazis. What gets me down is the response from my supposed comrades on the left, or even just the response in general, maybe not all these people are on the so-called left, which just indicates how polluted the whole atmosphere has become, and the whole intellectual climate has become, and how just people just don't have a clear sense of what words mean anymore. So here I am reading this story on the CBC website. That's the Canadian broadcasting company. On the CBC website about this attack, and the very first response, readers, where they can post their comments on the CBC website, is the typical knee-jerk response of the very first response. "We can't criticize the Israeli government now without being labeled anti-Semitic. This is extremely intolerant. It's like saying we're anti-American for criticizing the American government, or that we're racist against Chinese if we criticize the Chinese government. The government of Israel cannot be protected by hiding behind such a label." Okay, so now the slogan "Kill Jews" is legitimate criticism of Israel? I'm missing something. Something is sort of not adding up here. And that's the very first response on the webpage. Kind of not getting it. And unfortunately, I came across a similar phenomenon on my own website, worldwar4report.com, where I ran a story recently from, it's actually a reprint from my good friends at the Weekly News Update on the Americas, published by the Nicaragua Solidarity Network of Greater New York. Big shout out to my bud David Wilson of Weekly News Update on the Americas. If you're listening tonight, you've been doing a great job. And I can't believe those guys have been keeping that effort going for nigh on 20 years now, I believe. It's very humbling. They do a really, really good job. And I post their material to my website. And they recently did a story having absolutely nothing to do with any question concerning the Jews whatsoever, or any issues concerning that. Venezuelan offer to save Bronx jobs rebuffed. Perhaps some of you followed the labor struggle at the Stella Doro Biscuit Company up in the Bronx, where the company, after a long strike, the company was liquidated, and the workers there lost their jobs. And this was apparently after Citgo, the local U.S. subsidiary of the state-owned Venezuelan oil company PDVSA, Petróleos de Venezuela, S.A., which had offered to buy the company's plant up in the Bronx in order to save the jobs of the 136 unionized workers. And the company repudiated this offer, sort of a goodwill, grassroots diplomacy effort by the socialist government of Venezuela. The company repudiated it rather than, allow the jobs of their workers to be saved. So the first response that I get, I post that to my website, WorldWar4Report.com, and the very first response that I get from a reader is, or the idea was that they were going to, what Citgo offered was that they would buy the factory and allow the workers to turn it into a co-op, sort of following the same model of what the government of Venezuela is encouraging in Venezuela with the a lot of the private industries which they have nationalized. And to their credit, rather than running them in top-down bureaucratic fashion, they've allowed the workers to collectivize and to run them as co-ops. So the very first response from a listener is, co-op would be a bad example. This is what is happening in many cities of Venezuela. Today, workers with government support take over bankrupt companies and turn them into co-ops where the workers run the show and benefit it, as should be the norm. Okay, so far so good. Then he goes on to state, however, allowing Chavez to set foot in the U.S. would bring his and bring his social programs would be a bad example for the Zionists in power. So, and I responded, we were totally with you up until the word Zionist. I hate to break it to you, but it is capitalists who are in power in the United States, not Zionists. So, again, total non sequitur. And, a particular irony of it is that, not anymore, but, the early Zionists encouraged cooperatives, and their economic ideas were, in fact, socialistic. Remember the kibbutzim? Hello? Now, I'm not saying this to exonerate the early Zionists, because they were guilty of ethnic cleansing, and I offer no equivocation on that point. But using the word Zionist in this context just doesn't make any sense. The problem is, in this context, is not Zionism. The problem is capitalism. And, Zionists are in power in Israel. Zionists are not in power in the United States. Okay, you may argue that they wield too much influence, to use the buzzword, but they're not in power. And certainly, they dislike Hugo Chavez for their own reasons, but You know, the operative factor here is capitalism, not Zionism. So, you know, this is what I mean when I say that, you know, that the left is succumbing to right-wing ideology in its paradoxical embrace of anti-Semitism. And you know, the word Zionist is just becoming a sort of an all-purpose insult for the left without any regard for its actual meaning. Just as the word liberal is for the right, or the way the word communist used to be for the right. Well, there aren't any now, you know, the whole political spectrum has moved sufficiently to the right over the past 25, 30 years that now they can get away with using the word liberal as, you know, this knee-jerk buzzword to demonize their opponents as opposed to communist. And, you know, and the left used to use the word fascist exactly the same way. Now, when I use the word fascist, I mean it in a more exacting sense. But, the left just used to use the word fascist to mean anything bad, anything they disagree with. So, but now, you know, they use the word Zionist to mean anything bad, anything they disagree with, without any respect for the word's actual meaning. Now, you know, you can be anti-Zionist, as I am, in fact. But, you know, let's have some appreciation for what Zionism is and what it isn't. And, you know, when people use the word as an all-purpose insult, which has got nothing to do with Israel or its, you know, actual program of colonization and land theft and ethnic cleansing in Palestine, then I don't interpret that as anti-Zionism. I can interpret that as anti-Semitism. And, you know, using code words. We all know about code words, don't we? Yes. It's 1 o'clock in the morning on listener-supported, non-commercial WBAI 99.5 FM here in New York City. This is the last Bad Vibes kvetching show, which I'm going to do of the year. This is the Morris Orthodox Radio Crusade. My name is Bill Weinberg, if I didn't say that. And this is the last Bad Vibes show I'm going to do this year. I promise no Bad Vibes next week. And maybe we'll get back to Bad Vibes the week after that, because it'll be a new year. But not next week, I promise. Last Bad Vibes show of the year. So, let's see. So this is, you know, I was sort of harping on this point as well, that anti-Semitism is a fundamentally right-wing phenomenon. Another listener sent me an email taking issue with this. An intelligent listener wrote me saying, I'm not going to mention said listener's name because I was requested not to, but I am going to read listener's words. Listener wrote via email, "I don't think anti-Semitism is a right-wing thing, quote-unquote, or that leftists who adopt anti-Semitic rhetoric are somehow being non- or anti-leftist. There is a fairly long history of anti-Jewish sentiment on the left. I realize it is not the sort of left-wing politics you believe in, but the history is there even among anarchists. Proudhon and Bakunin immediately come to mind. Part of it is class-based, the notion of the Jew as capitalist. Part of it is radical secularist, Jew as backward, religious believer. And part of it is based on a proletarian universalism opposed to Jewish particularism. These perspectives are often co-joined. One can find this in French thought, French leftist thought, German leftist thought, et cetera." And, all right, I concede that this writer does indeed have a point, and even, you know, I mean, Marx pretty explicitly identified Jews with the bourgeoisie. So, yes, there is a legitimately leftist, unfortunately, tradition of anti-Semitism. But when I made that statement, I was specifically referring to anti-Semitic conspiracy theory and the anti-Semitism of the Protocols of the Elders of Zion and Henry Ford and the notion of a, you know, secret Jewish elite which is manipulating everything, and more generally the conspiracy theory of history. And that, I will argue, is a inherently right-wing phenomenon. Although, you know, there are certain strains within leftist thought which lead leftists to get taken in by it. But it is still a, it's an inherently right-wing phenomenon. It, in fact, is a fascistic phenomenon. And I'm using the word not in a hyperbolistic sense or a generalistic sense, but in a very narrow and precise and rigorous sense. It is a fascistic phenomenon. And this also, you know, gets back to, you know, the show that I did a few weeks ago about who is a and what is a Semite, and clearing up the air about all of the malarkey and urban legends which are going around about what exactly is a Semite and what is the definition of the word and what is the origin of the word, in which, you know, I noted that, you know, the word was actually coined by German philologists in the 18th century when they were dividing the world's languages up into groups and families and noting their common origins. In fact, the Semitic language group is a part of the greater Afro-Asiatic language family, which also includes Amazigh, the language of the Berbers, and Kemetic, the language of ancient Egypt, and Amharic, the language of Ethiopia, as well as the languages which we commonly think of as being the Semitic languages, which are, of course, Arabic, Hebrew, and Aramaic, which was what was commonly spoken in Palestine in Jesus' time. Is now spoken today by certain small groups of Jews and Christians in Lebanon, Syria, and Yemen. So, you know, around a century after the term Semitic was coined, and the notion of a Semitic language group emerged, you know, Wilhelm Marr coined the term anti-Semitism, as we noted, and the general point was that, you know, the initial insight of anti-Semitic theory when the name was actually coined, okay, and the name anti-Semitism was coined by the right, not by the left, okay. Wilhelm Marr was definitely sort of a proto-fascist. I mean, fascism with a capital F didn't exist back in his day. Was still a generation yet to come, but he was sort of a proto-fascist. You know, his insight, which was later, you know, built upon by classical fascism, was that, you know, the Jews were a contagion within Europe from Africa and the Afro-Asiatic world. And that the Jews were not truly European, but they are ultimately an Afro-Asiatic people, you know. So I still argue that anti-Semitism is fundamentally related to white supremacy, fundamentally related to white supremacy. And, you know, a lot of the left doesn't get this, and this is intrinsically related to the fact that, of course, you know, I mean, a lot of the Zionist establishment doesn't get it either. I think maybe some of the early Zionists, very early Zionists, sort of got it. But certainly contemporary Zionists and contemporary apologists for Israel have absolutely thrown in their lot with the West and are belaboring under the illusion that Jews are white. And my fear is that they're going to only wise up when it's too late. So let's see. I've already gone on for longer than I intended to. I'm going to try to wrap it up pretty soon. So there have been a lot of listeners who have contacted me off of the air via internet, voicemail, or snail mail. Actually, putting pen to paper and writing me here at the station. And the station, of course, is down here at 120 Wall Street. Do I actually have the zip code handy? I wonder if I actually have the zip code handy. Let's see. Can anybody help me out with the zip code? I really should commit the zip code to memory, but I haven't yet. Let's see. WBAI. No, I don't have the zip code. And it seems that it's not really readily available on the WBAI website. I'm going to poke around here. Contact us. One would think that it would be. Ah, and there it is. Yes, indeed. Snail mail. Bill Weinberg, WEINBERG, Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, care of WBAI, 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, New York, New York. The city, so nice, they had to name it twice. 1-0005. That's 1-0005. Right now, if you have something to say to me, because a lot of people have contacted me over this past year through means other than calling in to the on-air line, through either, snail mail, voicemail to 212-631-1115, or email. You can find my email address on through my website, World War IV Report, www.4report.com. Best way to find it. So, I've gotten a lot of very, very negative feedback. I've also gotten a lot of very, very positive feedback. As I say, when I talk about this Jewish stuff, there's always a big response. As opposed to when I talk about, indigenous struggles in Latin America, never any response. I don't know why that is. Actually, I do have some ideas why that is. I shouldn't play naive. But I want to say, to those of you who have actually sent me in communications which have been encouraging of my efforts, there have been a lot of you, and I want to recognize you. Sometimes I perhaps focus too much on my critics. So I do want to say thank you to all the people who have sent me in encouraging communications and told me how much that they appreciate the show. Many of you have requested that I get back to you, and I just want to let you know that I haven't blown you off, okay? I just get behind. I did a lot of traveling this year, and I've been really busy. I just get behind in my paperwork. Like I say, I'm trying to clear my desk for the end of the year. So I will be in touch with you. Those of you who requested that I get back in touch with you regarding certain issues which you got in contact with me about, I will get back in touch with you, hopefully this week, because like I say, I'm trying to clear my desk for the end of the year. So please bear with me. I will be in touch with you. And I also want to acknowledge that the big majority of those who sent email or wrote or left voicemail messages, sent email or actually wrote a letter, imagine, wrote a real letter, put it in the mail, envelope, stamp, remember? or those of the big majority of those who actually sent email or wrote a letter or left voicemail have urged me not to take listener phone calls. Now, I'm not saying that I'm never again going to take listener phone calls, but I do want to establish for the record, okay, that the big majority of those who have contacted me through means other than listener phone calls have urged me not to take listener phone calls because they consider it to be a waste of time. So I have to say that I am leaning toward ceding to the will of what appears to be a majority of my listeners and at least cut back on listener phone calls. And I should point out that Peter Lamborn Wilson, the founder emeritus of the founder and hierophant emeritus of this radio show, the Moorish Orthodox Radio Crusade, never took listener phone calls. And his show, was legendary, I would say, right? I'm standing on his shoulders. And there are plenty of other shows on WBAI that don't take phone calls, right? So I don't feel that I have any responsibility to take phone calls. So we'll see about that, okay? We'll see about that. Now, to those of you who have been critical rather than supportive in your communication, whether on air or off air. You fall into two broad camps. Those of you who make constructive criticisms and those of you who just want to spew hatred into my voicemail. And, well, to those of you who make constructive criticisms, I welcome constructive criticisms. So please keep the constructive criticisms coming. And to those of you who merely want to spew abuse into my voicemail, well, I welcome that, too. Keep the abuse coming. Because, quite frankly, you know, having Jew haters and crypto-fascists and Stalinists and faction operatives of whatever faction, okay, as enemies is the clearest evidence that I am doing my job. And if I ever seized, if you guys who have been hurling abuse into my voicemail ever seized in your abuse, I would know that I was doing something wrong. So please, keep the abuse coming by all means. I welcome it as vindication. It's very, very important to have the right enemies, and I am honored to have you people as enemies. So keep the abuse coming. 212-631-1115. Bring it on. I love it. Not that I listen to it, mind you, but I just like knowing that it's there. You know, you get in a couple of syllables, and I already know where these guys are coming from, and I just hit the delete button. I don't actually listen to it, but it makes me feel good just to know that I'm there. I wouldn't want to think that I was going soft. So, let's see, what else? Oh, yeah, big protests erupted in Iran once again, following the death of Ayatollah Montazeri. Very interesting history. Now, you know, we're actually somewhat critical of the protest movement in Iran because it's, you know, it's basically led by people who don't really support secularism, much less repudiate the increasingly neoliberal direction of the Ahmadinejad regime. To give creds where they are due, Ayatollah Montazeri was a sort of a principled reactionary, if you will. I mean, he was actually sort of seen as Khomeini's heir apparent back in the 1980s, and then started speaking up about torture that was going on in Iran. Was unceremoniously demoted from his role as heir apparent to the supreme leader, and has been a dissident ever since, and has actually more recently dissented from Iran's nuclear ambitions, and is by no stretch of the imagination, I mean, you know, he continues to be an Ayatollah and a supporter of an Islamic State and so on. So, you know, by no stretch of the imagination can he be considered a dupe of the West or anything like that. You know, I give creds where it's due, even though, you know, I am an enemy of his ideology. I still give creds where it's due. He, you know, stood up against torture. And stood up towards, you know, moves towards getting a nuclear weapon. I don't think anybody should have nuclear weapons. I oppose the United States and Israel having nuclear weapons first and foremost. But that doesn't mean that I don't oppose Iran and North Korea having nuclear weapons. So I give creds where it's due to Ayatollah Montazeri. And I will also note that, you know, what are our guests said on the... on the air last week, our guests, Frida Afari of the website Iranian Progressives in Translation, check it out, and her brother Kamran Afari, and Kevin Anderson, author, co-author of Foucault and the Iranian Revolution. You know, the point that they made, you know, it really didn't hit home until they said it, but, the movement in Iran is the most important, you know, mass civil disobedience movement which is going on anywhere on the planet now. And in a part of the world where, you know, that sort of thing is really, really needed. Where, you know, there really are, you know, unfortunately you begin to talk this way and because this rhetoric has sort of been exploited and appropriated by the neocons, it's unfortunately viewed with suspicion by a lot of progressives, but there really are a lot of ugly authoritarian regimes in the Middle East. An upsurge from below really is, you know, what is needed to try to open up some democratic space. And I do not believe that the movement in Iran has been co-opted by the neocons or the CIA, despite the best of their efforts to co-opt it. I don't believe it has been co-opted, and I certainly don't believe that it is a creation. I believe that of the neocons or the CIA, and I believe that flies in the face of all logic. And you know, I find it extremely demoralizing that the left has been so confused by neocon rhetoric that they have actually, large segments of the left have actually been dismissing the movement in Iran as a mere neocon creation. And in many cases, you know, cheering on Ahmadinejad and cheering on the repression. Really, really, really missing the boat in a big way. Missing a really, really important boat. Well, obviously, we aren't going to play cool music for the last half hour, but maybe we can play cool music for the last 5 minutes. I'll just say that, I don't feel that my politics have changed appreciably in the past 30 years that I've been calling myself an anarchist. I'm perhaps not as dogmatic as I was in my 20s. I'm still, broadly defined a left libertarian. I think that it's everybody else's politics who've changed, and that what is broadly defined as the left today really isn't. And it's, the left has always sort of had a problem with, cheering on despotism, which is why I'm an anarchist. But at least, the left used to cheer on left-wing despotism. Increasingly, it's cheering on right-wing despotism, like Ahmadinejad. So, my politics haven't changed. I feel like everybody else's politics have changed. So, we'll continue to explore these issues in, hopefully in the year to come, if I continue to remain on these airwaves, in spite of everything, in spite of continuing to push the envelope on free speech. And I promise no more bad vibes in 2009. Next week, if I'm still on next week, we're going to have fun and indulge in some escapism and fantasy, historically didactic fantasy, but nonetheless fantasy. So, all right, now why don't we go out with a little bit more from Tezlim, featuring the amazing Kyla Flexer on violin and Gari Hejedus, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, on just about everything, viola, saz, oud. Let's see. Let's play an explicitly Jewish cut, just since we're on that theme. Let's see, which one do I want to play? Yeah, okay. So here, this one is called El Meod Na'ala, which roughly translates as what they say in Arabic as Allahu Akbar, God is great, or God is divine. So from the Hebrew, of course. So here, why don't we boogie down with Tezlim and some a traditional Sephardic melody. Put on a yarmulke and smoke some marijuanica, because it's Hanukkah. Well, actually, it's not Hanukkah anymore. Hanukkah ended three nights ago, but one of my Judeo-hippie friends out in the Bay Area gave me that line, and I felt that it was so witty that I just had to pass it on to you, the listener. So let's just pretend that it's Hanukkah, and you can do the rest. Thank you.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.